Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Odegaard, Odegaard, golazo!
This is Arsecast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arsecast Extra. As always, we're James from Gunnar Blog. James, good morning to you.
Good morning to you too, Andrew. How you doing? How was your weekend?
It was okay. Nothing particularly strange or startling. There was a game of football yesterday that I sat in the garden and watched. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, you know, just kind of getting ready for the new season. I'm prepared. Are you prepared? I'm sure you're prepared. Are Arsenal prepared? That's the question.
It's really close now, isn't it? The start of the season. It's next week.
Next Friday. Nail-bitingly close.
Well, I mean, I'd love to say I saw the entirety of the Chelsea game. I didn't. I couldn't buy it. I tried to give the club $7.99 and they would not take it from us.
Same. I believe it was to do with a last-minute flurry of people coming along, realizing that they actually had to pay $7.99 to watch this game. I thought it was part of the membership, but there you go. Not to be, and I think it was a rush of people trying to do it, but I, like you, got caught in that sort of feedback or that loop where I couldn't buy it, but you know, I found an alternative way to watch the game. So yeah, I saw it. I saw the whole thing. Did you just see bits and pieces? Were you sort of?
I saw the first half, and then I've seen highlights of the second. So yeah, I did see a fair amount of it. I mean, it won't surprise you to hear I'm not a huge fan of preseason friendlies against Premier League teams.
No. We've spoken about this, haven't we? There is something, particularly London teams, and particularly teams that we are going to face in the opening weeks of the season. I don't care for it at all. Yeah, but look, it is what it is. We've got to get on with it. We've got a game against Spurs, obviously, next Sunday, and that will be you know, one which I think will grow in importance and weight because it will give us our last look at the team before the season starts. So do you have any, like, takeaways from the first half that you saw in its entirety? What would your main takeaway be from yesterday? And again, with the caveat, it is preseason, blah, blah, blah. But we're talking about the game. So what would you say was your one takeaway?
Probably that Thomas Partey being injured is quite a bad thing.
Yeah.
that would be the main thing. I mean, the other thing would be I thought we looked very vulnerable to the counter-attack in that game. And, you know, Timo Werner is an unpredictable player when it comes to final product. But I personally am convinced he's going to have quite a big season next season just because he seems to get so many opportunities. And I thought against this Arsenal side, he provided a real threat in the channels and one we didn't always really look best placed to deal with. How about you? What were your big takeaways?
Well, I thought Partey was great until he got injured. I was enjoying his performance and thinking, you know, perhaps greedily, some might say, but I was thinking when I was watching him turning away from players and really dominating that midfield, I was thinking, you know, wouldn't it be amazing if we had a player of better quality than some of the ones we already possess to partner Thomas Partey in midfield, how much that would bring to the team, how transformative it might be. And then I was thinking, well, crap, he's injured. And I've gone from hoping we get a partner for him to sort of keeping my fingers crossed that he is not injured for any prolonged period of time because I don't know about you, James, but I would find the idea of starting a season with a midfield partnership of Mohamed Elneny and Granit Xhaka somewhat underwhelming.
Yeah, I would too. I would too. I mean, that's my other big takeaway, I guess, from yesterday is, you know, everything that happened with Xhaka. Obviously, he came on, scored a goal, and then after the match, Mikel Arteta confirmed what, you know, Amy had reported earlier in the week, that he looks like he's going to stay at Arsenal. And I think that's the second time in about 2 years there's been a big turnaround on Xhaka. You know, it felt like he was headed to Hertha Berlin in that January window, and he was convinced to stay at that point. It seemed for all the world like he was going to be leaving the club this summer. And now I think he's going to stay. And I think we can take that at face value. I don't think, I've seen a few people saying, is it a ploy or is it a negotiating technique? I really don't think that's what's happening here at all. I think ultimately Roma haven't come close to matching Arsenal's valuation, and that's prompted a rethink. That certainly is what it seems to be from the outside.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't think there's any posturing or anything like that in terms of how they're dealing with this Xhaka situation. I think he's going to stay. It's a weird one, and it's one we've spoken about a bit in recent weeks. The idea that he might stay, look, it's sort of, I'm sure, disappointing for him. Disappointing for fans who are quite happy to move on, and maybe disappointing for the club. I mean, they have to dress it up in a certain way, don't they? They have to say he's important, blah, blah, blah. You know, you can't sort of come out publicly and say, well, yeah, it's a bit of a shit one. We're stuck with him now. Just get on with it, I guess. You know, you have to, as a club, I suppose, present that positive face of things. But, yeah, it's underwhelming and, you know, it feels particularly so because I think if Xhaka left, you had to, like, no question about it, you had to make a midfield signing. I'm not saying we don't need one now, we do. But if Xhaka had gone, you absolutely had no way of going into a new season without a midfield signing.
And it's, yes, that's true. It would have been one out, one in, I think. Yeah.
And it's still possible that we could make a midfield signing. We could, if we wanted to, bring in a player who could be, you know, the party partner, this fabled party partner. We could still do that. And with Xhaka in the squad and someone like Elneny, if he goes, then you make your squad better. I think there's a way of how do you say it? Like, what appears to be a bad situation, you make the best out of it, you know? But it feels a bit fanciful at this point. That A, we're going to sign someone there. B, we might find a buyer for Mohamed Elneny. And it's just, it's a bit too much more of the same, if you know what I mean. Right now, I mean, I accept that something could change and we could make a signing before the season. But right now, it's very hard to feel encouraged by what we've done so far in the market in terms of addressing what is a really important area of the pitch. I know we've brought in Lokonga, we've brought in Ben White, and we'll talk about him and Nuno Tavares. But, yeah.
But do you not think, Andrew, I mean, I know there's a lot of fatigue around Xhaka, but when you talk about a player who's a good partner for Thomas Partey, I'm not sure Granit Xhaka's ever done anything to suggest he's not a good partner for Thomas Partey. I think he has been pretty good with him.
I would accept that. I would accept that. I think it's a bigger issue with Xhaka, though. It's not to say he's incompatible with Thomas Partey. I don't think that's the case at all. And, you know, if you could get performances out of Granit Xhaka that we saw at the Euros, for example, that would be great for Arsenal next season. But what it is... it was like the carrot of change was dangled in front of us, if you know what I mean. After five years of Granit Xhaka, like if it was 1 year or 2 years, it's 5 years. And I'm not going to coat him off or anything like that. I think he's a good player. You know, he is a good player. He's had his moments which weren't so good, but I just think that like, if you ask me, would I prefer to keep Xhaka or Elneny, it's Xhaka. But it just felt like that was the... Because he's so fundamental as a part of the team, that how do you improve without moving him on? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I do understand that. I just think that the discussion of, like, we need someone who can dovetail with Partey, I think for next season at least, I think there is sort of evidence to suggest Xhaka can do that. Whether or not, you know, let's say Xhaka had gone and, I don't know, Ruben Neves comes in. I think there were plenty of Arsenal fans who didn't necessarily see that as an immediate upgrade. Whether or not that's true or not is hard to say, of course. We're sort of in sort of the... I think the carrot of change is always alluring. I think that's part of why there's such clamour for James Maddison over Martin Odegaard. It's because, like, we've seen it. Anything we've seen and that hasn't got us to where we want to be, we're like, oh, change it. And I do understand that impulse. But I just think this Xhaka situation is a little bit more complex. You know, I think... We had a conversation months ago about being in consensus that it was probably right for him to leave this summer. But part of the reason for that was this idea that after an excellent season in the Premier League and with 2 years remaining on his contract, he would actually be a player who could attract some decent revenue. Like, he made sense as a kind of sacrificial sell. But if that value just isn't there, what do you do? Like, do you just cut your losses? Some people say you should. I don't know if Arsenal can do that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know how serious Roma's bid was or how far below the valuation. You know, as I said in the Arscast on Friday, I think, you know, the fact that we weren't willing to compromise means it wasn't close to what our valuation of him was. It raises a bigger question, though. Like, if Xhaka had an excellent season last season, I think he was good. There were a couple of moments, obviously, that weren't so good, that were very costly in the end.
Yeah, and more of an excellent second half.
Season, you know, there was a consistency to his game. But I think that the question it raises for me is, you know, here is a 28-year-old with loads of experience, who's captain of his national team, who, you know, is available for a relatively affordable fee. It's not like Arsenal were looking for 50 million for Granit Xhaka. No, I think something like 20 million and the deal would have been done with Roma.
And he's coming off a good tournament.
He's coming off a good European championships. Why is nobody bidding? Why is nobody after him? You know, so there comes a point where the perceived value that we have in him as a player or as a character or whatever is not reflected in the way the market has reacted to his availability. Everybody knows.
But is that more about the player or more about the market?
Well, that's the thing. I don't know. I think it could be a little from column A, a little from column B, because the market is weird, and I accept that it's weird and everything else, but that no other club beyond Roma has made any kind of approach for Xhaka, who I think, you know, could do a good job for plenty of clubs around Europe.
Yeah, there was an interesting weird piece. Tom Werville did like a breakdown of the business that's happened so far in the window. And one of the trends he discovered across Europe is that clubs are buying much younger players, basically, in the same way that Arsenal have done. There isn't as much of a market for these guys in their late 20s. The one place there is one is Serie A, because they love experience over there. But even they are kind of operating within quite stringent budgets in that area. So... it's a really interesting one. Is it the player or is it the market? I'm tempted to say the market is a huge factor here, because if not, it's all our players, because we can't sell anybody right now, it feels like.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's true. We haven't sold anyone. We haven't sold a first-team player. Mm. We've loaned Guendouzi, and I know there's an obligation from Marseille. So technically you could say that's a sale, or it will be a sale in 12 months' time. But beyond that, we haven't sold anyone. We haven't sold Xhaka. We haven't sold Nketiah. We haven't sold Nelson. We haven't sold blah, blah, Willian. You know, all the names.
Cool, these guys,
all the names that have been linked with departures. Now,
Bellerin.
I really think that there is going to be a massive push towards the end of the window, which makes it difficult to balance your incomings versus outgoings. And it's not ideal, because you want players in place for the start of the season and everything else. Mm. I get it. But I do think this particular market will get to a point where clubs who need players and clubs who need to sell players, that kind of Venn diagram will start to overlap a bit more, where there's room for compromise and, you know, really... a need for maybe even players themselves to push for certain things to happen to ensure that they get playing time and they're not in a squad, for example, at Arsenal, where potentially we may be in a situation like last year where certain players cannot be registered because we've got too many players in the squad. So I think the market will dictate to a certain extent, but it doesn't make it any easier for us, or it doesn't calm our nerves as we're heading towards the opening game of the season. Just going back to Xhaka, what do you make of the contract offer? What does that make sense to you? Can you see logic in it? Does, you know, where do you stand on that? Like, and also like an offer apparently to Hector Bellerin to extend his contract. I mean, what does it say? I mean, maybe there's something to this that we're missing, but what does it say about a club who is quite willing to let two senior players go? And we think that's the case with Xhaka, and we think that's the case with Bellerin, that they're willing, quite happy, to let them go if the deal is right. But they're also looking to extend their contracts. That's confusing.
Well, it is and it isn't, in that I don't think Mikel Arteta was ever desperate to sell either of these players.
Not saying we're desperate. I think that's, you know...
Let me put it like this. Yeah. I don't think he would have wanted to sell either of them. I think this was about the players' wishes to go in both instances. You know, Granit Xhaka was very clear. He wanted a change and he considered this an attractive offer from Roma. I don't think that means that that Arteta thought, well, I hope I can get Xhaka out the door. I really don't believe that.
Sure, okay. I see that, yeah.
And in Hector's case, I think it's similar. I think he has wanted to leave Arsenal for a few summers now and has been asked to stay. I think the same would be true this summer. But I think, as far as I know, the management were only prepared to let him go if they felt they had somebody better coming in. And that doesn't seem to be the case. I am surprised about the new contract offers, nevertheless. Like, what I don't know is what sort of contracts these are. You know, Eddie Nketiah was offered a new contract this summer. It doesn't mean that, you know, they're going to build the team around him. It's a way of protecting the value of the asset. Maybe the offers made to Xhaka and Bellerin are similar. And with Bellerin, there's talk that he may leave on loan. I mean, I'd be a little bit surprised if that was allowed to happen, but maybe the contract is put a way of ensuring that, you know, his value doesn't diminish if he does go out on a loan spell.
Do you think maybe they're looking ahead to a time when, you know, perhaps after a season when fans are back in stadiums all across Europe, the financial impact of the pandemic is lessened and therefore clubs have more money, and these guys, if we can't sell them now in this market, we might be able to sell them in next summer's market. That feels like a bit of a gamble all the same.
Yeah, I mean, I think that probably is part of the plan, but I have to say it's not one I have huge confidence in. I'm not sure the financial repercussions of the pandemic will be over football clubs in 12 months' time.
I agree.
I'm not sure they'll be over within the lifespan of these contracts. That's what's going to be really interesting. I mean, ultimately, when you turn down money for a player, the question is, are you ever going to get anything better? You know, Arsenal turned down whatever it was for Ainsley Maitland-Niles, 15 million from Wolves, something like that. You know, they'll be lucky if they get an offer close to that for him at this point. With Xhaka, I think you're probably not going to get that. I mean, he's going to be 29, nearly 30 next summer. It feels like the assessment that's been made is what's more valuable to us, the money that Roma have put on the table or the contribution the player can make. And it feels like they've decided the contribution the player can make. Personally, I'm not that surprised, because Mikel Arteta has shown us what he thinks of Granit Xhaka.
Yeah, that's fair.
Time and time again. But I think for the health of the club and the evolution of the team, I think, it is underwhelming. And I think people were ready for more change than what we're likely to get. And in fairness, I think the club were trying for more change than what we're likely to get. But, you know, we as Arsenal fans, I think, all feel that our team are poor sellers. And I think that's right. Historically, we have been. What I can't be so sure about is how much of that is to do with the context. You know, I'm not looking at another Premier League club, apart from ones who are selling Jack Grealish or potentially Harry Kane, bringing in a load of cash this summer. I don't see that happening anywhere,
apart from Brighton.
Apart from Brighton, who've had an absolute windfall, yeah. And let me tell you, Sheffield United are rubbing their hands together. But apart from that,
yeah,
no, I don't think... I think it's difficult, isn't it? It's a really difficult time to sell players and to know what you should accept now versus what you might be able to get if you hold on.
Well, that's it. I mean, look, do you worry about that, though? Do you worry about Captain Hindsight coming along and saying... you should have taken that bid, or this was a ridiculous bid to accept. I mean, you make the point about Ainsley Maitland-Niles, and I think, you know, at the time when that bid was rejected, that £15 million bid was rejected, I think most people were kind of on board with that because he'd played a big part in helping us win the FA Cup. He'd made it to the England squad, and there was a sense that his trajectory, even if it wasn't necessarily going to be long-term at Arsenal, was on the up and up. And now, 15,
I agree.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So there's an element of time. Similarly with the Aubameyang contract renewal. At the time,
that's,
I think most people were in favour of giving him a new contract. Look how important he was, his role in winning us the FA Cup. You know, now, a little while later, it's more open to criticism because, you know, he can't seem to score a goal in preseason. I know we made the joke about him not using up any of his goals, but, I mean, he's taking it to ridiculous levels now at this point. There were a couple of chances in the second half that a player of his quality and caliber really should have done better with. Are you in any way worried about Aubameyang at this point, or, you know, should we judge preseason in that way at all? Is it all about what he does when the games start to matter?
It is, of course, all about that, but I think you would be an unusual Arsenal fan if you weren't a bit worried at this point. It's not because it's not just pre-season, is it? It's the kind of lackluster season we saw from him last year, how much he appeared to drop off. I mean, I've been in very much in the camp of, I don't believe this is kind of terminal physical decline. I think, you know, there was a lot of factors in the way he felt and the way he was playing last season. And I believe he can sort of have an upturn at this point. But pre-season is doing its best to make that prediction look foolish, that's for sure. I guess the positive, as always with Aubameyang, he's getting in the positions, you know.
Yeah.
And by law of averages, he will start putting some away.
Worth pointing out as well that, you know, the two chances he had late in the game were when he was playing as the centre forward and not doing runs up and down the left wing, which was something, even in a preseason game, I wasn't too happy seeing again, you know?
I wonder if we will see a bit of it, though. I don't know. I mean, yeah, left wing's an interesting position in this team, isn't it? I mean, we don't have the obvious solution there. I mean, it's probably one of Pepe or Saka, but it's not yet clear definitively which.
Saka or Martinelli, maybe.
Or Martinelli as well, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's, while we're dwelling on the slight negatives from yesterday, the defending, that was a bit scary, wasn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't great at all. I mean, on the first goal, I'm not exactly clear what happens. Rob Holding seems to step up very high and basically take himself out of the game. I mean, that flank of Holding and Chambers did look a little bit exposed, didn't it? Especially against Werner's pace.
It did. I mean, do you think this is what the idea is, to play with a higher line this season and maybe use Ben White as somebody who can deal with that space a bit better, you know, when you're leaving?
It felt that way. It felt intentional. I just think that Holding and Marie maybe aren't the best pairing to execute that plan. I know Marie's quite positionally astute, but yeah, I mean, it felt like it played into Chelsea's hands a little bit. And we did look vulnerable. And of course, the second goal we gave away was just a really basic kind of individual error, wasn't it?
It was. Poor pass from Hector, who'd just come on, but that's not really an excuse for not being able to play a five-yard pass to a teammate. Straight to potential new teammate in Tammy Abraham, who scored a goal. Did Bernd Leno worry you at all?
Not from what I saw, but from the way you've asked that question, I suspect the answer is that he did worry you. So yeah. Do inform me what I may have missed.
I think his decision-making when he's playing the ball out from the back is increasingly scatty. I don't quite know what's going on with him.
I do have some concerns about him, only that it seems kind of an accepted truth that all is not well with him and Arsenal. In that, you know, there are no talks about a new contract. He's got 2 years left on his current one. Certainly my understanding is there's an expectation that he'll probably move on next summer. And I just wonder, goalkeeper for me is such a position where sort of psychology and the mental side of things is so crucial, maybe more so than in any area of the pitch. And I just slightly worry about that degree of focus. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like as well, he's a guy who is, you know, as it stands in this squad, really our only option. In goal.
Yeah. I mean, right now, 100%.
You know, because...
you can't throw that kid in, you know?
No, exactly. Or Runarsson, or, you know, you just can't. Even if he is going to go, he still is going to want to play this season.
Yeah, and he's got to earn a move somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. But I think he really needs to feel the heat of competition really quickly. And again, we talk about midfield and we can talk about attacking midfield and everything else. Our issue in that area is not numbers. We have numbers. We have players. Whether we rate them or whether we think they're good enough or whether we think we can improve with them, that's another question. We don't have a goalkeeper. We do not have a number two goalkeeper. And that has got to be done before the start of the season, surely. Like, you can't run the risk of going into the new season with Okonkwo or Runarsson as the number two, an injury to Leno, a sending off for Leno, you know, and you're playing one of those guys against Chelsea or Man City.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that feels to me, as much as I want a central midfielder, and I really do, that feels to me like the most pressing issue that we've got right now.
It is. That's the one they have to solve before the season starts, I think. Like, what are we, you know, a week and a half away from that, really? So I think we all know about the Ramsdale interest. I think that one probably has a few more days to run. And if they can't get an agreement, I think they'll be forced to move on. And you know, they'll have to do something, even if it's short term. I mean, I've heard potentially they might look at another loan. Just to get someone experienced in who can provide cover, which makes a degree of sense. You know, if you can't get the player you want or if you can't see the right option available, go for a loan. I mean, ultimately, the Matt Ryan loan signing was one that worked, that was quite effective. He gave us cover in games. Yeah. He provided a bit of competition. I think a lot of people will wonder why Arsenal didn't just proceed and make that deal permanent. But I think they may end up doing something similar. And that is the urgent one.
It is. It is. Hopefully not the only one. I mean...
Just a quick thing on the deadline for that, by the way. Ramsdale's got a League Cup game a week tomorrow, the Tuesday the 10th, in theory. And obviously playing in that would...
Cup
make
tie
him ineligible to be Arsenal's cup goalkeeper, which would basically be the point of signing him.
In the League Cup anyway, yeah.
Yeah, in the League Cup, so first half of the season. So I think that will provide some sort of notional deadline. It wouldn't surprise me if Arsenal explore other options before then, just to try and have things in place, but that may be the point at which that one kind of falls down or doesn't.
Okay, I'm sure we'll have some more transfer questions in part two. I think we should talk a little bit about our first side of Ben White. Came on, rescued a situation that we made a complete mess of and gave Chelsea a brilliant chance to score with a ball over the top. And yeah, I mean, he came on, looked good. I mean, he must have thought, what the fuck am I having to do here so quickly into my Arsenal career? But, you know, get used to it, mate. You're going to have to do it. You're £50 million. It's all on you. He's going to have to be the reincarnation of Franz Beckenbauer crossed with, I don't know, Bobby Moore crossed with Tony Adams. Some of those people are not dead. So
They don't have to be reincarnated. We weren't terrible defensively last year. I think it's worth remembering. Yeah. And that's a lot of people's objection to signing Ben White, is that, you know, we weren't awful. But I think it was good to see him. We haven't spoken since he sort of formally joined. And I have obviously concerns over the size of the price tag, but you know, I do think he looks like a really interesting player and could be a really important player for Arsenal over the next, you know, 5 years or even longer. Obviously, we need it to work because it's been a big investment. But I think in theory, he does have the attributes required.
I like the idea of the signing. Obviously, at this point, we can't tell whether this is going to be money well spent, but I like the idea of it. And, you know, he does... you know, command that extra bit of money because he's English, he's homegrown, he's did he play for England? Is he an actual England international?
Yeah, he has. Right. He played in the warm-up games.
Right, so. Okay. So, you know, that all feeds into the price. But I do like the idea of it, and it's clear that he's been brought in to do something quite specific from that central defensive position. And, you know, we talked about that in the Patreon podcast, if people want to go and listen to myself and Phil, what sort of role he might have in the team. But, it, you know, it's quite interesting, isn't it, that he signed on, well, whatever it was, officially signed on Friday? Mm-hmm. Was that when it went down? And he's in the team on Sunday. You know, so
yeah,
there's no hanging around.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's not like he's had loads of training behind the scenes to be ready for this. I mean, he's thrown pretty much straight in. I think he'll start the Brentford game, probably.
Yeah. Well, I think he should. He's a £50 million signing.
Mm.
So start him. Absolutely. I don't think... You know, we keep saying this, but it's not a case that when players go on holidays, they let their hair down and, you know, pack on the pounds and stuff like that. So most of them anyway, you know, but I think he's going to be physically ready to start that game. And hopefully after, you know, a couple of weeks of training with the team, he's more in tune with what's going on around him. I mean, I have to say, though, you know, we lost and people don't like losing and nobody likes losing to Chelsea, and I get that. But I did think in general, despite some of the absurd defensive moments that were worrying, there was some stuff to like from Arsenal in the game yesterday. Smith Rowe hit the post. I think we should have had a penalty with Thomas Partey. Joe Willock scored an actual goal, which wasn't given.
Great finish. A nice pass from Lokonga in the build-up to that one.
That was lovely. That was a lovely pass. I did like what little I saw of him yesterday. Again, early days, but, you know, to have that little pass in his locker was very encouraging. Tavares got forward quite well, showed some nice stuff in the opposition final third. I mean, here's a question for you. You know, when we're talking about the sameness of our midfield... The you know, oh shit, here we go againness of Xhaka Elneny. Yeah. Like, look at what Joe Willock did yesterday. I mean, he came on, he was on for 20 minutes, he scored a goal. Is that not something we should be, in the absence of, you know, anything in the market, or until such time as that happens, is that not something we should be really considering, maybe not so much... even as a starter, but certainly as an option from the bench.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, one thing I was thinking just there is, you know, Lokonga's not someone who I envisage being a first-team starter right away, but if Thomas Partey is injured, I'm not sure what Mohamed Elneny can do that Lokonga can't, based on what I've seen so far.
Mm.
And I know that I would be more excited to see Xhaka and Lokonga than Xhaka and Elneny, or equally, as you say, Xhaka and Willock potentially. My only thing about that is I kind of feel like Willock, maybe to get the best of him, he requires a bit more freedom than that. You know,
wanting to
be the third midfielder.
Yeah, I wasn't really talking about him being one of two, but I was just talking about him being a midfield option, at least from the bench, because, you know, like you said, we know what Elneny can do. It's pretty staid. It's pretty average. He's a lovely guy, but he's not going to drive the kind of improvement in the team that we require. Whereas at least with Willock, there is a tangible end product to what he can bring to the team. And I know the roles are very different. So I'm not saying it's Willock in place of Elneny. I'm just saying that, you know, at a point where we're accepting that the transfer market is difficult, where perhaps things haven't gone quite the way we wanted, and therefore we have to recalibrate and rethink about how we're going to do things until such time as we can figure that out, having the potential for, you know, Willock to come on and Willock his way into the game, I think it's something we should lean into.
Yeah, I think, well, I think we'd be mad not to use him while we have him, for sure. And I think, you know, ultimately, I think whether he stays or goes probably will come down to if Arsenal buy another attacking midfielder or not. You know, if you sell Willock, but then you don't get another number 10 or, you know, attacking midfield player, the burden on Emil Smith Rowe at that point is huge, probably too great. So, yeah, I think it's a fascinating one. Newcastle keeps saying we're waiting for a decision from Arsenal, so we have to assume the ball is kind of in our court on that one. But I thought there were things to be encouraged about. I mean, Willock's impact was one. I thought Smith Rowe was dangerous.
Yeah.
I thought Partey obviously was very good until the injury.
Thought Pepe was good.
Pepe was good. I thought, you know, Kieran Tierney had his moments as well, got forward well. So there were things that were encouraging. We created chances, which has been a big problem for this team, of course. Didn't take them all, but there you go. I think, obviously, a pre-season defeat kind of hurts more when it's to a Premier League rival, theoretical rival.
Yeah.
And that's one of the frustrations of having these games. The result feels maybe more significant than it should.
I mean, yeah, the positives and negatives, it's always going to be the way. I mean, I the Aubameyang on the left thing, I know it's been done to death, but like I was a bit, you know, watching him, watching overlaps and watching Aubameyang trying to cross with his left foot for for someone else to score just made me wish that there was someone else in the Aubameyang position and Aubameyang was in the middle to not score. You know, but you know what I mean? It just felt, I don't know what we're trying to learn from that. What are we trying?
We may not be trying to learn anything, though, I think. We may just be getting minutes in Lacazette's legs, you know. Who knows? Who knows? I mean, you would never put it past Mikel Arteta because he did it a lot in the past. But the second half of last season, I think we barely saw that. I'm trying to remember now, but I don't think we saw a lot of Aubameyang on the left. So I would be surprised if he went back to it. Certainly once Saka comes back, I think it'll be one or the other of Aubameyang and Lacazette. I think that if you're picking based on form and sharpness and who looks there and who doesn't, I think there's a debate between Aubameyang and Lacazette. I really do. But yeah, I think it should be one rather than both.
Yeah, maybe that's a debate we can have
closer to the time.
Well, it's close enough.
It's pretty close, yeah.
It is.
I mean, the other thing about the game, obviously Joe Willock came on and scored. I thought Eddie Nketiah came on and looked sharp, and that's been a bit of a theme of pre-season. I mean, maybe he just knows that there are eyes on him and his future is, you know, up for grabs, essentially. But I think he has looked sharp throughout these friendlies, and credit to him because he's a player who seemingly doesn't have much of a future at Arsenal.
Yeah, I mean, we did have some questions on that, so I might as well just do one before we go into the break. From Sean, who's at Mean Sake or Mean Sake, I'm not quite sure. He says, in light of his pretty stellar work in build-up and the box, do we keep Nketiah for 20, 30 minutes a game? Really loved the look of him yesterday, and we know he has goals in him. If we seem keen to play Aubameyang left wing, the depth could really help us. I mean, he has, I think, in fairness to him, done as much as he can do in pre-season to either push for more minutes with Arsenal or to show other clubs that he's, you know, he's around and he could be a good purchase for them. I think he's worked hard and done pretty well in pre-season. So, I mean, where do you see him? And do we know if Balogun was injured? Was that a situation?
Don't know, actually. Not sure about that. But with Nketiah, I mean, I guess he's showing us a little bit of what we presume Mikel Arteta must have seen in training to have, you know, brought him back from Leeds when he did and kept him at the club when maybe it would have been better advised to sell or loan him last January. And I think I'm pleased for him that he's shown a little bit of that, albeit in friendly games. I'm not sure it dramatically changes anything regarding his long-term future. I mean, you know, we talk about Aubameyang on the left, but we listed three good left-sided options earlier, almost, you know, without hesitation. Pepe, Saka, Martinelli. You would have to include Smith Rowe as someone who could play in that role too. Reece Nelson can do it. We're not short of wide players. So I do think Aubameyang will play most of his football through the middle. And if Lacazette is still around, I just don't think there's any need to keep Nketiah. And I actually think for his career, he probably should look to go and play regular football. I think that is clearly the next step for him. I mean, I think where it gets more interesting is that thing of, like, you know, could Arsenal... if Arsenal had sent him out on loan in January last year, who knows, they might be able to attract superior bids for a guy who clearly does have goal-scoring potential. But as it stands, we're not getting the offers that we want. But I still think he is kind of one of the big hopes in terms of actually bringing a bit of cash in.
Okay, well, look, we'll see what happens with him. It does feel like, you know, given the contract offer, which was then turned down. Look, it seems clear what should happen. Whether it happens or when it happens, we'll wait and see. But look, we're going to take a quick break. We're under a bit of time pressure today because you've got to go relatively soon. So we'll go into the break, come back with your questions and more in part two right after this.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to the Arsecast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer questions that you send to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arseblog. And also on the Arseblog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you are an Arseblog member on Patreon. Just to let you know that if you are a member on Patreon, we have just launched or renewed our Fantasy Football League for the upcoming season. Exciting stuff, James. I'm looking to finish last again. Well, I say
pushing
again,
for bottom spot.
I was pipped to the post by some scoundrel right on the last day of the season. I thought I'd done it, but some guy, he got there before me. So I'm determined to do it this season. If you want to play, if you want to be part of the league, you can sign up to Patreon, patreon.com/arseblog. We have got the league, but we've also got good prizes. There's, I think it's 400 euros and an Arsenal shirt for the winner. And prizes going down to 200 euros, 100 euros with Arsenal shirts for second and third place. Fourth place, you get an Arsenal shirt. And of course, because you came fourth, you get an actual trophy. So if you want to be part of the Fantasy Football League and get access to all the other stuff we do on Patreon, patreon.com/arseblog. Right. Let me ask you this one first, because you guys wrote a story in The Athletic last week about our interest in Lautaro Martinez. Is that how you say his name? Lautaro?
Lautaro Martinez.
He is an Argentinian striker. He scored 17 goals for Inter Milan and got about 10 assists last season as well as they won Serie A. And Arsenal were, I think, if I'm paraphrasing here, if I get it wrong, please correct me, but encouraged or given some encouragement that a bid might be possible or successful this season. So Laguna Grumpy says, if there is truth in the Martinez rumours, how would this signing affect Aubameyang? As a largely confidence player and with no likely buyers, could that make it even harder to get performances out of him this season? How, I think said in the piece, it would probably be dependent on Lacazette going and making space in the squad for a new signing up front.
Mm.
But how does a high-profile striker signing tally or marry with the presence of Aubameyang as the club captain and, a very senior figure in the team and dressing room?
Well, I guess you put one of them on the left. I don't know. It's a really interesting, this one, because the original reports, I think, came out of Italy, maybe, about Arsenal, or maybe it was even Argentina, about Arsenal being interested in Lautaro. And I have to confess, I kind of furrowed my brow and thought, or raised my eyebrows even, and thought, that doesn't seem particularly plausible.
Mm.
Obviously, since then, I had a proper look into it. And basically, Inter Milan's situation is that they probably need to sell somebody else. They sold the right back Hakimi to PSG, but there's interest in Lukaku from Chelsea and other places, but they obviously don't want to lose Lukaku. Consequently, they might consider selling Lautaro. Why would he move to Arsenal from the Italian champions? Good question. The short answer is money. He is not one of the best paid players at Inter, and Arsenal would probably substantially increase his salary. So I think that would be a factor. I guess as well, I'm obliged to say all the stuff about an exciting project. but number nine is something that Arsenal are really looking at. I mean, we did a story the week before about Tammy Abraham being under serious consideration. But it is all dependent on somebody going. And the way this Lautaro thing came up is through talks over Hector Bellerin, and his availability was mentioned, and he's someone Arsenal have wanted for a long time. I believe Alexander Lacazette's name was also mentioned in those conversations with Inter Milan. That would obviously be a brilliant solution for Arsenal if they said, oh yeah, we'll take Lacazette off your hands. I'm a little bit dubious as to how likely that is. And I think if there's an opportunity to make this Martinez deal work, I think the club will take it. But I do have the strong impression that it will depend on somebody going out. And that feels like where it will fall down. I mean, look at the Xhaka situation. Look at the Bellerin situation. Look at all the problems Arsenal are having moving players on, particularly when they're in kind of their late 20s. So, yeah, I think it's definitely one to keep an eye on, because the club's interest is absolutely serious. They really, really like this player. And it's seen as an unusual opportunity to sign a player of a lot of talent. And I kind of think, to be honest, if that comes up and you can afford to do it, you should probably do it anyway. If you really believe he's a kind of transformational player who can take the club into its next era, because if we're completely honest, neither Lacazette nor Aubameyang are the future, are they? I mean, part of me wonders if they should be saying to Inter, what about Aubameyang? If they believe this Lautaro guy is that good, and I can't honestly say if he is or not. I don't know. I haven't done enough research to
really I mean, just on a follow-up from that then, Rianne, who's at Rianne Vacha on Twitter, says, how many exits do you realistically see happening between now and the end of the window? I would want Runarsson, Bellerin, Cedric, Kolasinac, Elneny, Torreira, Willian, and probably Lacazette, Eddie, Maitland-Niles, and Nelson. But genuinely, can't see more than half of those happening. I asked, by the way, if there was a return date for Lucas Torreira. And was told that they couldn't give me a date. So that doesn't sound like he's coming back anytime soon.
I don't think he's going to be on the pitch against Brentford. No. I mean, it's really... Runarsson's a really interesting one as well. I mean, he seemed to be set to head to Turkey. That move fell through. He was actually added to the subs bench late in the day yesterday. It was almost like they were trying to sneak him back into the squad without anyone noticing. How many do I realistically expect to go?
I mean, let me just count those. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 maybe? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6,
7, yeah. 8,
yeah, 11. That's like a whole team.
I mean, yeah, there are some squads carrying a lot of extra weight. I mean, I think Chelsea had 29 players at the Emirates yesterday and they haven't even got their England players back yet. So, like you said earlier, there is surely going to be a flurry of activity. I think Runarsson will go before the deadline.
Kolasinac?
Yeah.
Bellerin?
I think that's more difficult.
Cedric?
I don't think he'll go.
Willian?
If we've learned anything from England's progress to the final of Euro 2020 is that you can't have too many right backs. That's the lesson Mikel Arteta is going to take into next season. I think Runarsson, Kolasinac, Nketiah.
Nelson? I saw a story that Crystal Palace would like him on loan, but with a guy who's got a year left on his contract.
Unless, I mean, it would be a precondition of a loan that he signed a new contract. You'd have to think.
Yeah.
Maybe Nelson, maybe Maitland-Niles. I think of that 11, maybe half a dozen will go. I think it just feels too much to think that they will all happen at this stage. You'd want to have a chunk of that tied up already. And where it gets tricky now is sort of, although availability might increase in the last few days, the window of business might increase, you get to that weird kind of brinkmanship of, well, we don't want to let X go unless we know we can bring Y in. And, you know, the clubs insist on waiting until the very end, but there are disadvantages as well as advantages to that. I mean, how confident are you that they'll go?
Well, I think we did talk about this at the start of the summer, and someone said in a question, can you dig up your departure things? And of course, I can't find them and I can't remember what episode it was on. But I think at the start of the summer, when Mikel Arteta was talking about the need to be ruthless in terms of reshaping the squad, I think that was the word that he used. And, you know, I didn't just apply that to players coming in. I applied it to, you know, dealing with some of the players that we have in the squad right now who we want to move on. I think I would have been more confident. Here we are, though, in August, and there's been barely any movement out. And what's interesting about this is that, like, for a lot of those players, there is literally no interest, or certainly no reported public interest in those players. Inter Milan for Bellerin. There was that Turkish club for Runarsson. Nobody's been after Cedric. I think there was some spurious talk about Fenerbahce. Kolasinac, not a word. Elneny, not a word. Torreira, not a word. Willian, few little bits, like the Inter Miami thing. And I think there was a club in was it Dubai or something last week that was doing the rounds, but that was immediately shot down. Nketiah, I think there was a bid, wasn't there, from Crystal Palace that we turned down. Not a word.
I'm not sure, but yeah, but yeah, that was reported, yeah.
Yep, not a word about Lacazette. Not a word about Maitland-Niles. Not a word, really, about Nelson until this thing last week or over the weekend about Palace taking him on loan. So, you know, that's worrying. If you want to move these players on, and I understand why people do, but there doesn't seem to be a great deal of interest.
No, and I think if our spending and sort of income predictions, I think we both had Arsenal bring in quite a lot of money this summer.
Yes.
Certainly in my case, I think it was like north of, you know, somewhere between 50 and 100 million. And that seems ludicrously naive at this point, I admit.
It does. And look, this is a club that has spent basically about £75 million so far this summer on the three players we've brought in. Tavares, yeah. Lokonga, Ben White, £50 million, 17 and a half, eight. And in terms of what we've done with departures, I think we got a £1 million loan fee for Matteo Guendouzi, and they're going to pay us whatever, close to $10 million towards around this time next year as the obligation. But that's it.
Yeah, it's not a lot, and I think a lot of the calculations the club will have made in terms of what they can do this summer will have probably have been with the expectation they would move some of these players on. I mean, you know, we were probably thinking $30 million for Granit Xhaka. We maybe thought $30 million for Joe Willock at one point.
Mm.
You know, that's already £60 million that we currently are not counting on. Then you add in your Nketias, your Maitland-Niles, what we thought we might get for them, what we thought we might get for Bellerin. You know, it wasn't unreasonable in an ordinary summer to think that Arsenal might bring in $100 million. I know sure. It sounds crazy, but that wasn't hugely unreasonable. We're not going to do that.
No. Do you think that maybe in terms of outgoing deals, and I accept that the longer it goes, the more it has an impact on what you do in terms of players you bring in, right? Because you've got to find that balance between squad size, influx of cash, you know, All of those kind of things. I realize that they're sort of all quite related. But if we're looking for incoming deals, we're looking at the start of the season as the crucial point, right? Because you want players in for the opening games. You want the players available for Brentford, for Chelsea, for Man City. When it comes to players we don't really want or aren't really using or aren't prepared to use, like, you know, a Willian or a Nelson who didn't play very much last season, or Eddie who didn't play a great deal in the second half of last season, you know, Maitland-Niles, I know he went on loan. Kolasinac, you know, we just let him go to help Schalke get relegated and left ourselves without a left back. You know, these are guys that aren't going to make any real tangible difference to our season if they play. Does that allow you a bit more wiggle room or less? Should we be less panicked about the departures at this point, given that the window is open for basically another month at this point and everything else?
Maybe, but then I was just worried we end up in kind of similar situation to what we did last season, where we're having to like pay people to go just to kind of knock down the numbers. I mean, maybe when that was happening last January, we should have been more cautious about in our predictions about, you know, what we might be able to bring in this summer. Maybe when a club is literally paying people to go away, that should tell us something about not only where we are and where the kind of value of our players is, but also what the state of the market is.
Do you think that maybe has in some way changed the perception of Arsenal as a selling club? Do you think it's had an impact? I mean, Roma, let's remember, had a £10 million bid for Henrik Mkhitaryan rejected by Arsenal last January before the world turned upside down, and then basically got him for $1 million as a way of releasing him from his contract.
Mm.
You know, why is a club that's dealt with us in that way in the past going to push the boat out for Granit Xhaka? They must look at Arsenal and think, well, maybe they're fucking soft touch. We'll just, you know, stick here and they'll eventually crumble. Do you think that could have been part of what happened with Xhaka?
Maybe. I mean, it's an interesting thing. Like, we all want Arsenal to sell better. But but what does that look like? How does Edu get $20 million for Alexandre Lacazette? Or how does he find a buyer for Mohamed Elneny? I think the problem is, I don't think that's easy. I don't think you can just go around knocking on clubs saying, I've got Reece Nelson here if you want him for £18 million or something, and just hope that someone eventually buys. I think selling's not active in that way. I think what it's more about is protecting the value of players. And I think that what happened with those players that we had to release or pay off is that we had kind of so severely damaged their value that it was impossible to move them on. You know, I think if someone doesn't want to buy a player, there's not that much that Edu or Richard Garlick can do about it. But in the time when they are an Arsenal player, I think there is more that we can do to make them attractive.
Mm.
And I think that's where the problem is. Like someone like Kolasinac, his value is not salvageable at this point because, you know.
Yeah, because we know. Yeah.
Yeah. But like someone like Nelson maybe or Nketiah, if they had been sold at a time when they were more attractive or if they'd been sent out on loan to, like Joe Willock, and been allowed to gain more experience and put themselves in the shop window. You know, if you leave a player out of your registered squad, you're essentially showing you have no value in them. So there are things that we could do better to make our players more marketable. I don't think it's fair to be like, find a buyer for Kolasinac or whoever it might be, because you can't make another team want to pay for a player. I wish you could.
Yeah.
But you can do more to make that player attractive, you know, I think. Or less to make them unattractive.
Yes, I think that's a good way of putting it.
On the subject of Nketiah, by the way, I had a question here on the Discord. Where has it gone, though? Where has it gone?
Where?
Somewhere. See, they come in so quickly. They come in so bloody quickly. The Land on Discord says, do you think Nketiah is more likely to be a Donyell Marlon or a Ben Ikhafoe? And if you don't know, Donyell Marlon, we let him go back to Holland and he's now moving to Borussia Dortmund for about 20 million or so.
I suppose what you would say is that Marlon left when he was much younger, didn't he? He was about 17 or something when he left.
Yeah, 18 maybe. Yeah,
no, and he went back to Holland and did very well. Like, I think it's probably more an Afobe kind of thing for Eddie. Like, if you were going to ask me, is Eddie Nketiah going to move to Borussia Dortmund for £30 million or €30 million? I don't think so. No. Which isn't to say I don't think he can have a good career and score goals. I think he will. But I don't think at whatever age he is now, he's still, what, 21? You know, has he quite shown enough? Yeah, he's 22 now, you know, so he's 22. So I don't think he's quite shown enough to suggest that he's going to all of a sudden become, you know, not an elite level striker, but, you know, somebody who a club like Borussia Dortmund is going to spend a load of money on. So, yeah, maybe the Afobe comparison is a bit too far the other way, but I don't know.
He's had a torrid time, Afobe, hasn't he? He's had serious injury problems and problems in his, you know, some tragedy in his personal life as well. And I think, but lest we forget, he went to Wolves and made himself kind of a £10 million player or something like
that.
I think he joined Bournemouth. Or Stoke, was it? I forget. But I think Nketiah, if he can avoid those kinds of debilitating injuries, I think he can have a Premier League career for sure.
I think so too.
I can see him at a good Premier League club like, I don't know, you know, West Ham or something like that, and making a pretty good career for himself. And he'll always, you know, he'll always be in demand because I think he is a goal scorer, you know, and he does find opportunities in the box, and there'll always be a market for players like that. I don't think he's going to be Serge Gnabry based on what we've seen in terms of like regret of letting him go. But I think he's going to be a good Premier League player. And I think it's crucial he takes this step now for his development. I think it's really important.
Yeah. Okay, here's a question on the Discord from Blair, who says, in a preseason friendly, what is the responsibility of referees to at least protect players from hard tackles like we saw today? There were too many hard tackles coming through the back of players. I don't think the game time is worth it if we're picking up serious injuries in the process. And this is the, you know, you've got to get the players ready. You can't just use your kids in preseason. It's about getting your senior players fit and ready for a new season. But, you know, there's always that worry, isn't there? Particularly, I think, when you set up two fixtures against London rivals, there is maybe just a bit more of an edge in games like that than there might be in, you know, with a game against a team from France or Spain or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and fans back in the ground. Maybe that turns the temperature up a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of people back at the Emirates Stadium for the first time. over the weekend. I mean, were there, from what you saw more of the game than me, were the tackles a bit tasty?
There was a couple, in fairness. I don't think there was anything brutal, but there was one, like when one guy, I can't remember who it was, went through the back of Tierney. Obviously, Partey got injured in a tackle with Ruben Loftus-Cheek, and that, you know, wasn't like the worst tackle you've ever seen in your life. And it can happen in training as easily. You know, he went over on his ankle, and again, we're sort of keeping fingers crossed he's okay. But I just felt like the referee yesterday might have just got on top of that a bit earlier, you know? There was a couple, I think. There was one where could have been Kovacic took out Smith Rowe, one of those where he just sort of ran across him, you know, fairly cynical stuff. And to be fair, Xhaka put the studs on one of their guys, Zappacosta, I think it was, you know.
Right.
The wrong guy. It should be Werner or Ziyech or Pulisic or one of those. One of the good ones, granted. Get one of those. So, yeah, I just think that you run the risk in a game, you know, particularly worried about Sunday, to be honest. You know, I know you need the games to be competitive. They need to be competitive games to get the rhythm and all that. But, you know,
there is an intensity and maybe a bit of animosity that the Premier League games bring that's maybe a little bit unwelcome. I sort of would agree with that on balance. I think that maybe this is a consequence of these kind of Premier League fixtures. But then, to be fair, something we haven't said is with international travel being risky and in some instances prohibited, that's why we're seeing so many intra-Premier League friendlies.
I can see the logic of it. I just, you know, I just don't care for it.
Yeah. So let's have a look at another question. This is from Sesky, who's at Sesky Art on Twitter. And they say, do you think a change in playing style is causing more injuries to Partey? Maybe he's always been a bit of a Diaby, but has it just been discovered now due to him getting more time on the ball?
That's interesting. We had one from Brad Dennett as well, at Bradley_Dennett, who said, is it safe to label Partey as injury prone?
If he's not,
he's really
been very unlucky.
Yeah. I think he could well just have been very unlucky. You know, certainly yesterday was bad luck. A challenge, his ankle rolled. You know, it can happen. Anyone who plays football knows that, you know, you can even just turn the wrong way and your ankle can go, you know, if you just put your foot down very slightly wrong. So there is an element of bad luck. I think last season, it wasn't so much that he was injury prone as he had an injury that we didn't manage as well as we should have, which then had an impact, you know, on the rest of his season, to be honest. So I'd like to think he's not. I think comparisons to Abu Diaby are a bit over the top, to be honest. But, you know, it's clear he's a really important piece of the team. And it's really bad news for us as fans. It's really bad news for Mikel Arteta as well. It really is. And I'm not making any excuse for Arteta. I think, you know, he is a manager who is probably going to be under some pressure.
I think he is. And I think actually the lack of the sort of degree to which people are disappointed by some of the business that isn't, it looks like, going to happen now is going to contribute to that pressure.
Well, I mean,
fairly or unfairly?
I think fairly because, you know, if you're Mikel Arteta and Edu and you're waking up this morning and you're 10 days away from the start of the new season and the news on Partey isn't great, let's say it's 3 or 4 weeks, which will rule him out of the opening three games, probably. And, you know, he's not back until after the international break. And those are three tricky fixtures. And if you're Mikel Arteta and you're Edu and you're sitting there and you're contemplating starting the season with Granit Xhaka and Mohamed Elneny as your central midfield pairing, with the greatest of respect to both of those players, that is a duo that should not have played together like from a couple of years ago. Like, they're not the most compatible anyway. But it was clear a long time ago that this was not the kind of partnership that, you know, a top-level Premier League midfield club should have. If you're sitting there this morning and you're thinking, well, that's what we've got to do, I'd also be thinking, well, fuck, something's gone wrong here, and obviously the Partey injury is that, but it should laser focus them on what the team requires in midfield. And look, maybe it'll be Lokonga and Xhaka. Maybe it will.
When Arsenal were first interested in Lokonga, one of the comparisons that was made to me was Partey in terms of his playing style. And, you know, I think they do potentially view him as a kind of heir. Whether or not they think he can kind of do that job right now, I don't know. I mean, Pramod AFC said, is Partey's niggle a good news in disguise? I'm not saying I'm happy, but I do think it might force them to bring in another replacement.
Yeah, I mean, look, if they're not looking at this and thinking, oh, fuck, then there's something really wrong. Because at the end of the day, Mikel Arteta isn't just the head coach. He is the manager. Mm. And along with the technical director, a big part of their job is buying and selling the players. We know that Arteta is hands-on in that regard. You know, there's a lot of talk about various influences over some of our targets, but pretty much all of them are Arteta-driven, right?
Yeah, he's very involved. Yeah, for sure.
Exactly. So he's green-lighting all this. So if you preside over a summer which sees you start the season, and I realize this is potentially a worst-case scenario situation, but with a partnership that has contributed to two successive eighth-place finishes, and you go into a new season without improving it in any way, then it heaps a load of pressure on you. The injury to Partey is unfortunate, but not doing any other business in midfield to offset the potential damage that one injury can bring to a key area of the pitch, that's on those guys. That's on those guys.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Lokonga is that piece of business.
Maybe
I don't know.
Is, yeah, yeah. I mean, but look, he's so tidy.
Yeah, but even so, it comes very early for him. I mean, if Thomas Partey, as we said at the top of the question, if he's not injury prone, then both he and Arsenal have been hugely unlucky in terms of they brought him in to be this crucial transformational player and we keep losing him. If that's something that's in some way a trait of his and Arsenal could have known more about, then of course you can't put that down to poor fortune. But I do have a degree of sympathy with them in that this keeps happening. but there's definitely room for another central midfield player there, especially if you think that Joe Willock might leave, for example.
Yeah, well, look, here's another one. This is a quite interesting one from the Discord from Arse Baby. Related to Partey's injury, we're seeing a lot of speculation on the severity and potential length of absence based on video and photos. I feel it's a morally grey area even for qualified doctors to be participating in this because no one posting about it online will have 100% accurate information since only the club will have that. I can see this getting to a point where club reports on injured players receive massive backlash because online doctor 469 disagrees with this assessment of the injury. What is your take on this trend?
I think it's kind of always been a thing. You know, how many times have you watched a football match and gone, oh, that looks bad? You know, you do have a perception of the severity of an injury based purely on watching it. And of course, you're often wrong. I think any doctor would say that if they're only making an assessment based on a video, it's not going to be a full, thorough and accurate assessment. Mm. And I actually think that most people in the medical profession or physiotherapists tend to know how qualified and how good you have to be working at the top level of elite sport. So I think, you know, they would always caveat any assessment they would make online with, you know, the people doing the job are probably in the best position to judge. I think it's relatively harmless, to be honest, and a natural impulse for fans to wonder how long their player's going to be out. What do you think?
I think it's quite interesting in that, you know, it's another little niche of football Twitter that has developed over the last number of years. You know, there have been all kinds. I mean, I think back to, for example, when Michael Cox started his blog. nobody was doing tactics.
Exactly.
You know, and now it's like, it's de rigueur, I guess. But when Michael set up Zonal Marking as a website, it was this new thing, a new way for someone to cover the game. And I guess, look, the game and injuries are different. But I think what's happening is you're seeing people with some expertise looking at photos, looking at videos, and suggesting various scenarios and outcomes based on the severity of the injury. So it's quite informative, almost educational. Dr. Raj did the one about Partey, and he was talking about the type of sprain it is. And if this happens, it could be this. If that happens, it could be that. And I think that's where it is. It's nobody's, as far as I can see, or I certainly haven't come across somebody saying, well, based on this video, Thomas Partey is definitely going to be out for 6 weeks. You know, I'm not seeing that. What I'm seeing is an explanation of the kind of injury that it is, and based on the severity, some time frames associated with that. So I'm not seeing anybody, you know, declaring this, that, and the other, or making definitive judgments on injuries from videos. I mean, if you see a guy with his leg in two, you could probably make a fairly definitive judgment on that. If you're waiting for the results of an MRI scan, which we're not going to have access to, and nobody's going to have access to apart from the medical people at the club, then, you know, all you can do is provide information. And I think that's what it is. And, you can either you can look at it or not look at it. If you don't like it, you know, that's where I stand. I think, you know, there is the point about it being a morally gray area, I think would apply if, you know, these guys were saying, well, this is what's happened 100%.
Definitively.
Yeah. You know, and I think for the most part, that's not what's going on, you know.
And I think as well, when you get into an area where you're kind of questioning the authenticity of the medical reports Arsenal are providing, that becomes a bit clouded, because sometimes it suits them to avoid detail. But I do think generally they are trying to be as transparent as possible.
They seem to be quite vague about Gabriel.
Yeah.
Don't they? Yeah. There seems to be a vagueness around that one, which I think is a little bit...
Yeah. Well, when they're vague, I think that's always worrying, I think, because I doubt it's that they don't know. One to watch, that one. I don't know anything, but they don't seem... It doesn't sound like he's going to be back in a hurry, that's for sure.
No. We had a lot of similar questions. Have you got one?
Yeah, T. Mark said, is passing out the back the hill that Arteta is going to die on? I know this is his philosophy, but it seems we still have too many players that are too error-prone to carry this out. Should we ditch it until those players have gone? Bellerin, of course, with the error yesterday. Although I feel like with passing out the back, it's never one player's fault. You know, I do think that
sometimes
there's such an onus.
sometimes it is. You know, sometimes the obvious, there's a very simple way of doing it, and the player fails to do it, and therefore it becomes an issue. I mean, I suppose you would say that, okay, are you pragmatic and change the way you operate? Or do you make most of the players comfortable with the principle that you want, with how you want to play, and then replace the guys who aren't that good at it? You know what I mean? I think we get worried when we see players make a mistake like Hector made yesterday, because it's just so basic. And they always look quite basic, don't they? The errors in a situation like that, where perhaps you're susceptible to the high press. But if you play out from the back and you beat the press, the reward is high. Well, it is if you've got players who can counterattack well. And I think actually at times we did that quite well yesterday. So it's not my biggest worry about this team, to be honest. I think we look relatively comfortable, most of the players, although I go back to my concern about Bernd Leno and some of the passes that he plays to players who are under serious pressure. There were a couple yesterday where, you know, they were the wrong pass. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's just rusty. You know, it's his first game back for a while, but I feel like that's become a bit of an issue for him. Like, I don't think like when it came to playing out from the back, Leno was a very, very significant upgrade on Petr Cech, right?
For sure.
But I still don't think it was the strongest part of his game, which I think is his shot stopping. And now it looks as if that playing out from the back thing has become a problem for him. It could be just decision making or technique or execution. I'm not quite sure, but it is a bit of a worry.
It doesn't bother me massively as for the team generally, I have to say. And, you know, for all our concerns about it, I'll reiterate, we didn't ship a load of goals last season. Mm. It'd be nice if we cut out the ones that were due to these errors, but they are so much more eye-catching a defensive mistake than the other types of defensive mistake you can make in terms of positioning or failing to pick somebody up or losing a man at a set piece, whatever it might be. And there is at least a kind of a positive reward if the risk pays off with this. I don't think passing out from the back will be the hill Arteta dies on. I do worry that passing around at the back could be the hill that he dies on.
Yeah, you know? I feel like the hill that he will or could potentially die on is the creativity side of things. And we're sort of running out of time here right now because you've got to go in a second. But, you know, that I think is something we perhaps can discuss in another podcast. But I do think it's going to be creativity and scoring goals. That's what has to improve. And I know that people talk about the need for a center half and playing out from the back and all that kind of stuff. It will contribute to the way that we play. But unless we can address those issues, it won't be the passing out from the back that is the hill of death, if you like.
No.
The hill of
passing
death.
Out to, the hill of death. Passing out to the defenders, I don't have an issue with. It's kind of everything that happens after that.
Yeah, progressing the ball. Yeah, getting the ball up the fucking pitch to somebody who can do something with it. Very quickly, before we go, Alexander Love, who's at LoveAJ95 on Twitter, says, how is Gunnar Blog's father-in-law doing at the Olympics?
Great question. He didn't actually make it in the end.
No.
They fell at the last hurdle. The Jamaican national team for karate fell at the last hurdle of qualification.
No.
I know. Sad end to the movie. But... he's doing very well nonetheless. He's currently in Turkey on holiday.
Okay.
So, you know, I think he's getting over it.
All right. Cool. Well, look, we got to leave it there for today because James is in a hurry. He's got to go. I'd sit here and talk to you all day, of course, but, you know, this is...
Maybe I should just let you do that. I should just leave.
Just leave and see what happens. I'll just start talking about the things that are on my desk. Ooh, look, Swiss Army knife. Look, it's got the thing. No, that could be boring. But look, thank you, everyone, for being here as always. Thank you for listening, for downloading, and all the rest. And we will catch you on the next one.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.